TG Campfire Podcast. We talk TV. Welcome to the show. This is podcast number 624, and I am Libya, television and film editor, and your host for this podcast, and we have returning guests.
Hi, this is Yusun, costume designer and TV enthusiast from Los Angeles.
Hey, this is Peter. I write for We Live Entertainment and also live in Los Angeles.
Hello, it's Malik El Amin. I'm managing director of Griot Theater.
But where do you live, Malik?
I'm universal, baby. I'm galactic.
Okay. And for this podcast, we are going to talk about Daredevil Born Again, episodes 1 and 2, Prime Target. We're going to finish up that show, episodes 7 and 8. Paradise, we are also finishing up episodes 7 and 8. We're going to talk Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, episodes 7 and 8, and Severance, episodes 7 and 8. I feel a theme happening right here.
There is a theme.
First up we have in the news is that Netflix has ordered crime drama Nemesis from Courtney Kemp. I don't know what Nemesis is, but I'm excited.
Who's Courtney Kemp?
She seems to be largely credited as a writer.
Oh, okay.
And producer. So she did the franchise.
Yeah, I don't recognize Universe her face.
And oh. Beauty and the Beast.
All right. Next is that The Recruit has been canceled at Netflix after 2 seasons, which is 1 season less than Netflix normally cancels a show. But I did not like The Recruit, so I am not very sad about it.
Did we watch that? Did we cover it on the podcast?
We did not, because I watched the first couple episodes and I didn't like it. I thought that I got the concept of The Recruit being about a guy who's kind of an incompetent FBI or CIA agent. I can't remember which one he was. But I mean, he was just really bad at his job, but it was supposed to be charming and fun. And I did not find it either.
Isn't that the agency that you guys just talked about?
No, that's the night agent.
You say that. We joked that would have been a better premise for the agency.
If so the agency should have been the recruit.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
So next is Running Point, which is a show that just premiered on Netflix last week.
Hudson. Yeah, Kate Hudson. I saw a little of the pilot. It's okay.
It has been renewed for season 2 at Netflix already, which is...
Did it get good reviews?
I don't know.
Something happened. At least people are watching it.
Oh, yeah, basically like... It's sort of Ted Lasso-y where it's like...
She's the head of a basketball team.
Right. She's the head of a basketball team type of thing. Right, like that's sort of... It seemed all right. Like,
okay, Peter, you be the canary in the coal mine. You go forth and watch it and tell us if we need to see it. Next piece of news is the Vikings creator has launched a new historical drama called Blood Axe on Amazon. And guess what it's about? Vikings.
I was like, Blood Axe kind of gives it away, right?
I was like, really, dude? This will be his third series about Vikings. I'm like, branch out, do something different. And they're not even really spinoffs. He's just like picking different points in history that he wants to go into. And I mean, Vikings has worked for him, so he's like, let's keep doing Vikings. And
he's trying to get that summer home in the south of France.
Oh my God. It just feels...
It's like the LA, it's like the Law and Order.
With Love, Megan has been renewed at Netflix for season 2. For those of you who are watching that, that was not me. I don't do reality.
Megan Sussex, is that who you're talking about?
Yes, it's her series. It's all about her.
So that's the only thing I've heard about it, is that she had Mindy, what's her face on the show?
Kaling.
And she called her Meghan Markle multiple times. And she was like, you know what, Sussex now.
Ha!
She's the Duchess of Sussex.
Yes, she is. The Summer I Turned Pretty will end on season 3 at Amazon. Did any of us watch that?
I think my mom did. So get my mom on the podcast. I think my mom liked it, but I mean, I have not seen it.
We'll do a podcast where we have moms on.
For Mother's Day, we should just bring all our moms on.
Right. That would be fantastic. Yeah. What are you watching, Mom? Like, tell us.
I'm pretty sure The Summer I Turned Pretty is the show where Taylor Swift, as most people know, has been redoing her albums. Mm-hmm. And that show, she has dropped the new versions of a few songs peppered in that show. So like
wow.
people would be like, oh, there's a new version of Delicate. And if you want to hear it, it's on that show. But no, I've just never seen it.
What's
I mean, it looks
about?
Like a young, looks like a young teen girl.
Teen,
and it
something.
Turns, sounds like it's the summer she turned pretty. Like, it's like, and life got great. You know,
oh,
like,
my
so,
goodness.
I don't know. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. let's talk about the shows now. Woo-hoo! How about that? First up, we're going to talk about Daredevil Born Again. And for those who don't know and think that they can jump into the show just straight, I don't think you can. Netflix had 3 seasons of Daredevils plus all their spinoffs and blah, blah, blah. And now it's on Disney Plus. And technically speaking, this is season 1 of a brand new show. But if you haven't watched Daredevil, the open will not make any sense. Like, and it will have very little emotional impact.
I mean, so essentially it's Ahsoka, which
yes.
is also Disney Plus, where you probably should have watched Star Wars Rebels and Clone Wars.
Which was 5 seasons, and you needed to watch that
seasons.
In
how
order to watch
How many seasons was Netflix? How many was Daredevil?
It was 3 seasons of Daredevil, but now Punisher's going to show up. So there's 2 seasons of Punisher. There was the Defender show.
I mean, I'm of 2 minds about what you just said, about whether how steeped you have to be into Daredevil to appreciate it. Some of the stuff, yes. Some of it you can kind of infer. So, I mean, we didn't actually say what happens, which is they gather at this bar, right? To,
yes.
To celebrate who was it? Cherry's retirement?
Yes. The retired cop who always says, I'm about to retire. And then they
yeah,
get killed.
Never
yes.
a good, never That's, a good move.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
So his retirement party. And then, I mean, I was so happy that they had brought in Foggy back
Karen.
Karen because I heard that they were gone and they brought him back and I was so excited that they brought him back. And then I'm watching this open, I went, oh my god, are they about to kill them? Like, oh,
it's a pretty good move though. That
it
like
was it was
because he basically though. Foggy's basically been protecting this criminal, I guess, and the guy's
yeah, like a CI
staying,
or whatever.
He's like, he's
yeah.
staying at my place and he's like, oh no, he sounds like something bad's happening. So Matt gets in the Daredevil suit and heads there, but then like partly on the way, he's like, I'm so sorry, man. And basically it was all a trap to get Foggy. So then Daredevil has to get all the way back across town. And of course it's too late. Like,
but what was the best thing? I mean, there was a couple of cinematography things that I thought were amazing, which was the big one shot of the fight. The fight was a wimp. Like the camera is following them all the way down the hall, but also the sound design was next level. Because they did a really good job of showing us what he was hearing at one point, how far away. Like, there's the part where he was listening into Foggy's phone call.
Oh,
where
yeah, that was
you,
cool.
You hear
yeah.
the bar, and then he, like, focuses a little too far, and then you hear traffic further out. And then he refocuses, and then you kind of pull in
right.
to the phone call. That is excellent sound design.
What I like most about the fight is that Daredevil and Bullseye got tired.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
I mean, realistic.
You know, you see
so
these
realistic.
Television shows of people are fighting for 3 minutes and they're fighting just like they started. But
right.
in this fight, the longer they went, both of them were breathing heavy. It was like,
yeah.
huh,
to be fair,
you
time Daredevil had like 10 knives in him at one point.
That was nice. The pin cushion was nice. I just love the fact that they both got tired, which felt more real. I know we're in a superhero show. I just love the fact that they actually were exhausted. And yes, Daredevil ended up looking like a pin cushion by the time they were done with it.
I will say, though, going to the point that we started with the whole, like, how lost would you be if you haven't seen the original show? He throws Bullseye off a roof.
Off the roof, right.
Guy hits the ground, and you're like, whoa, Daredevil killed somebody. And then the guy's eyes open, and I'm like, wait, what's going on? And then Libby had explained, oh, because in the other show, he actually got, like, an antantium thing. And I was like, because, like, for me, I'm like, how is he alive? I was like,
right.
there's no way. Like,
and then the conversation with Fisk in the restaurant is fantastic, but that has weight because of 3 seasons of their relationship.
Right. Well, by the way, we're calling him Fisk. We're not calling him Kingpin.
He's going
well,
by Fisk.
He is not Daredevil. He is not Kingpin. They
yes.
don't want to be called that
yes.
because they've left their shadow selves behind. Obviously, there's no show if they really do that, but like, that's what the setup is. Like,
right.
So yes, he's Mayor Fisk.
I'm going to call him Kingpin because Fisk doesn't really work for me. I just like the fact that he came back to town to get his girl back. And it's clearly an unhealthy relationship. I think even if you don't know the previous shows, you can tell it's an unhealthy relationship.
He also went to marriage counseling or whatever. Like that was hilarious.
Yeah.
Funny.
Well, what's telling about the relationship too, is when he calls her on the fact that he knows she's sleeping with somebody else, her first response is, please don't kill him. Like, that's the first thing out of her mouth. She doesn't deny it. She doesn't say it's not happening. She doesn't act like she doesn't know what he's talking about. She's just like, so please don't kill him. Like, can we agree that that's not going to happen? And he's like, you don't have to worry. I'm not going to kill him. But I was like,
didn't accept that. She was like, promise me.
Yes.
Right? Because she doesn't even accept. He was like, oh, I wouldn't do that. She's like, no, I need you to tell me you're not going to kill him.
I love that she's like a business genius. Like I love that. Like, that's cool. Like, you know, I didn't see all the seasons of Daredevil, but you gave me a link to like a really good
recap.
So people should definitely watch a recap.
I think it's well known now that this show had gone through a lot of reshoots, and the opening and the diner scene were not in, they were not originally shot. Those were reshoots.
Wow. Right.
And the diner scene's like the best scene. And originally, it was that Matt Murdock is kind of not being Daredevil, and he has some conversation. He's like, oh, well, I lost my best friend a year ago. Which, I mean, that could have worked, but
this was way better.
Too boring.
No, but I don't want to
be told stuff. I want to be shown stuff.
I know what you're saying. It's a tricky thing because it is show, don't tell, but there are times sometimes in narratives where I'm like, well, honestly, you could have just told me instead of.
But I thought this had way more emotional impact.
Right. I thought the scene was justified because it was very well done. Karen, is she going to be in the season? Or do you guys think that was just her? I don't know.
I think because they conceived the show without his friends, I think she's gone. Because he has a new law firm with a new partner and a new everything set up.
Correct.
So I think they're gone.
And he's got a new girlfriend.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Blind date.
So they got ambushed on this blind date together.
Right, right, right.
I initially thought and hoped that she'd actually set it up for him to talk to a therapist because she was like, you need some help.
I thought that too.
I agree with that because he definitely needs counseling. Like, so I was disappointed
that it was actually only a date. They knew what was happening for 13 seconds they protested against it and then they just dove right in. Yeah. So that part I didn't quite appreciate that journey as much as, you know, the setup perhaps suggested. We were talking into episode 2, which the kind of the main new thing there is Hector Ayala, who we later find out is White Tiger, or maybe we already know is White Tiger.
I called he was White Tiger like right before he found the suit. But I've heard other people called he was White Tiger like right when he went in and started fighting the cops.
Really?
And I didn't call it.
He's got a lot of skills. He's got a particular set of skills. So
He ends up intervening when you find out these like two dirty cops are beating somebody up. He tries to protect the guy and one of the cops jumps in front of a moving subway train.
Well, to be fair, he tripped over his own feet, and then the other cop was like, you threw him into a train. I was like, that's not what happened at all. And also, I'd like to point out, there are cameras in the subway stations. Why is this not just solved? Like, why is this a thing?
You're right.
That was a plot kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So Daredevil overhears the police beating up White Tiger in the police station and decides to become his attorney. So Daredevil gets Cherry to investigate Victor Ayala before they figure out that he's White Tiger.
He finds
the costume and tells Daredevil. And then the next scene is a Daredevil in front of the judge asking that he not tell the jury that he's White Tiger. And I was like, they don't know other than the fact that you're telling them.
No. Why? He says, because he says something like, he's like, if I know, they're going to find out really quickly. So we have to get ahead of this. They're not going to be able to hide it. Like he's, it's a little throwaway line, but yeah.
The costume is the only thing that was there.
But his point
also, it could have been the wife could have ended up telling.
He wanted to get ahead.
There's enough there that he's smart enough to figure out. They're probably going to figure it out. So we should get ahead of it.
I think
that's the idea.
Anyway, but the whole court drama of it all in the second episode felt a little long, and I was like, can we get through this? The first episode felt like a really good pace, and the second episode felt not so great.
Well, I fell asleep.
No, it doesn't count because you were sitting on my couch and I was kicking you.
I don't know what happened, but I was actually very tired. So I'm not going to blame the show in its entirety that like it put me to sleep. But I actually rewatched that episode, like most of it, like because the beginning, like I kind of knew. But that part where I definitely was like, I mean, I was just closing my eyes. You can watch a show with your eyes closed.
No, you can't.
Listen.
No.
And
especially not when you're over someone else's house and you guys are supposed to be watching it together. No.
Well, I don't know what happened, but I was extra, extra tired. So I went back and it was still boring. So like, it did not get better with eyes open. Eyes closed, eyes open, same thing.
So just two more things to say before we leave this episode.
Go ahead.
We talked before about the couples counseling, which happens in this episode.
Right.
I am curious whether we're supposed to believe or understand that it is a coincidence that he goes to the woman Daredevil is dating for counseling. So I haven't watched ahead, so I don't know if we get an answer to that.
Fisk does.
Yeah.
And the other thing is just the end of episode two, which is called Optics, by the way. Oh boy. He went and fixed a pothole. That's not what I intended to talk about, but it just reminded me that they had a moment in this episode where he went and got a pothole fixed.
Right. Yes.
Tells you why they reshot stuff.
The best mayor ever, but go ahead.
Yeah. So where I was going was the final fight when the dirty cops try to beat up a blind attorney.
Which is insane. Why?
They were going to kill him.
I know, but I didn't understand that. I was like, dude, if your whole objective is to cover this up, killing the lawyer of the defense guy makes no sense.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, what are you doing?
But the cool thing was how Daredevil clearly got into his feelings by the time that fight was over. Like he's breaking people's arms and cracking their necks. And
yeah, that was great.
I was like, okay.
Yeah, that was great.
The fight was good. It brought it back.
He did warn them. He was like, you don't want to do this. No, really. You don't want to do this. It's almost like you don't want to make me angry because then you wouldn't like me when I'm angry. Yeah, it was like that. So that was fantastic. And I'm definitely in. Like I said, the second episode was a little slow, but they got me in by the end. But let's wrap this one up. Next up, we're going to talk Prime Target. I know, Malik, you like the actor and everything. It did not stick the landing, I would say, because there was that moment in the pre-finale episode, penultimate episode, where he's solving the equation, and oh my god, he's so dumb how he got caught.
Well, let's just remind how we got there, right? So he got captured.
He got captured in the dumbest way ever.
The bartender who I talked about, I told him you shouldn't trust the bartender, was like, oh, we're going to go by my mom's house or whatever.
Oh my god. And he suspected. He overheard part of the conversation enough that he was like, where are we going? Who are you talking to? Like, it was suspicious enough that he asked those questions. And what did he do? He got in the car anyway. And he was like, no, my boyfriend could never betray me. And he drove him directly to the bad guys. Yeah. And I was like, how are you so dumb?
And how so are smart you this- at the same time.
Oh my God. And so then he's like, I won't solve the problem for you. I will not do this equation. And he keeps that up for maybe a couple of days. And then they put the book in front of him. And he's like, oh my God, I got to touch the book. I got to solve the problem. I got to. And then what does he do? He basically starts doing the equations on the board. And I was like, dude, you do realize once you solve the problem for them and they know it works, they're going to kill you.
I mean, it's predictable. I think the one thing that they have established is he's obsessed with math. It's kind of like a drug. Yes. So it was like putting a drug addict in a room with some heroin on the table and be like, we're not going to make you take the heroin. We'll just, you know, keep you here and see what happens. Right. And he shot up for sure.
Yes, he did.
This series has had challenges, as did these last two episodes. So episode 7 that we're talking about now, Prime Finder, certainly had its challenges. I did enjoy when they kidnapped his teacher and locked him in the room with him.
I like that too, actually, because that guy's so sweet. I really like, and I like their relationship. I like that he really sees that guy as like his father figure. And I really like the two of them solving the problem together and deciding that they were going to call it like both of their names. And it was, that was like, oh, that's so sweet. And of course, he immediately gets killed. So
not immediately. They went to the end of the episode.
And then they kill him.
Yes. But on the prison break, which is important to point out.
Taylor's the one who organized the prison break because she pretended she was in with them, but she was really reprogramming their things. And it was a good prison break, but it wasn't. He's the lead guy, and it wasn't like he broke out because of his smarts. He broke out because he literally got rescued.
Correct.
And then the only good thing that came from his mentor being killed is he was like, oh, I guess math could be bad. You know, like maybe I shouldn't just solve all math problems.
Right. So then if we get to the season finale, which is episode 8 called The Key, So they give us a little flashback to show us that the dean of the school was
this
math whiz himself back in the day.
Wait, is this guy a spy or like a math genius?
He's just a math genius. He's not a spy.
Oh, okay.
He is obsessed in his own way about what math could and should do. And he's essentially an anarchist almost.
Yeah, he wants to break the system. Yeah. I just felt like after everything we've been through for the show, when you get to the end and then he ends up shooting his professor in the head of the school, the guy who basically manipulated everything and killed all these people so that he would solve this math problem so that he could bring down the government and the banks. Like that was pretty much, you find out at the end, that was the point of all of this craziness. And then he just shoots the dude in the head. But then they set it up for season 2, and I was like, nope, I'm out. That is not happening. I am not coming back for season 2 of this show.
Yeah, I didn't like the pilot for Prime Target. I thought the guy was kind of bland. But fun fact, for those of us that remember the 90s, Good Will Hunting, when Matt Damon and Ben Affleck pitched Good Will Hunting, that was part of the script. The script was supposed to be math genius guy in college gets recruited by either the CIA or something. And it's funny because, of course, Good Will Hunting, they ditched that whole thing. And then the movie becomes more of a character drama. But like when I heard of Prime Target, I'm like, wait, isn't that what Good Will Hunting was supposed to be? So now we're seeing. So this is what it'd be like. And it's like, yeah, it's not as good.
I'd say the biggest challenge with the finale was that the central character, Ed, didn't have anything he was trying to do for most of the finale. He was literally just going with whoever called him or showed up and said, hey, come with me. So it's a big problem when your central character is not going for something. Mm-hmm. And so him becoming a murderer at the end was kind of surprising, kind of interesting, but it wasn't like he was wrestling with his darker side throughout the series or anything.
He just
like
surprises
that.
You with it. He just like pulls out a gun from nowhere and shoots this dude in the head.
It wasn't earned. I didn't watch
it. It was not earned.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad I never started it because I'm not, like, I feel like just the way you guys are talking about the show and like, I don't want to watch 8 episodes of a math genius. That doesn't seem interesting.
Who could have been?
Who created
it? Could have been.
It was not.
It was not. Yes. All right, I just want to stand up for math geniuses though. We can do it.
The next thing we're going to talk about is Paradise. And wow, a show that actually was good. And I know, Malik, I like the show better than you did. I think this is one of the flips where I liked Paradise more than you did. But I think that the way it ended was better and more.
So,
wait, how do I not hear this? Because I don't want. I haven't finished.
You have to stick your fingers in your ear and say la 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 la.
I'm gonna sing jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way.
How about you just tell us, what did you think of the three episodes you did see?
I thought they were great. I saw it with someone who doesn't normally watch a lot of TV, and he seemed pretty riveted. I loved James Marsden.
Really good.
Yes, I thought he was playing so out of character for what I know him for.
We all got used to him as Cyclops 20 years ago, and it's kind of a boring role. So yes. I'm always he's fine.
It's a boring role, and it's a hero role. And, you know, this guy is so nuanced and troubled and interesting. Yeah. And so he has to, tap into all of this, subtlety and in his personality. And then also, he's very damaged and imperfect. And so I loved watching him, go through that.
Yeah. So I watched the pilot with you, and I think the key is their relationship. So I like Sterling K. Brown, and I like James Martin, them together and the flashbacks. That's all great. I really much like this. I did sigh a little at the end, because when the pilot starts, I was like, oh, okay. So they're in this perfect little area. I mean, I guess because he is head of security, Secret Service for the president, maybe they all live in this little cul-de-sac. But at the end, when it's sundown in 2 hours, I was like, oh no. I was like, are they in a dome or something? I was like, oh, they're in a dome. So this is kind of one of those weird things where the characters are interesting to me. So I'm I will probably keep watching the show because I like the characters. But honestly, the fake dome, obviously something bad happened to the planet. I mean, it also seems like the central conflict is that it sounds like his wife somehow did not get to be
correct
in the special thing. But I'm kind of why that? It seems like they have a good relationship. There's no way the president wouldn't be protect his wife.
But that's what you get to see on that episode, which is why
that's
what
we're about to talk about, sir.
Yeah, so we're about to talk about it. So episode 7 is probably the masterpiece of this series, because we go back to day one and we get to see the apocalypse happen in real time. And wow, when they showed the explosion happened in that tidal wave, which was 300 feet high, the visual effects of that was just devastating. And you watch it and watching everyone there, because it was so great, because this is new. The thing that really gets you is that news reporter who's like, oh, I'm on the 50th floor of this skyscraper and we're totally safe. We'll be fine. And then she's doing the broadcast and the cameraman freaks out. She's like, what? And she turns around and the wave is way over their heads.
Yes.
And then you're like, that was so good.
I'll meet you and I'll raise you one. It's not probably, it is, I think actually by far the best episode in the series. Part of that has to do with the subject matter, and part of it just has to do with the writing. It's, they have different writers come in on different episodes. I think not every show has the same level across, every episode. This one, I think, was pretty disparate in terms of the difference between the quality. Episode 7 was by far the best writing on the entire series. Mm-hmm. Part of it is what you said. So we're actually seeing what's happened when the catastrophe happened. We're seeing true stakes. We're seeing who knows what when.
Yep.
And yep.
The fact that he didn't tell his head of
his homegirl.
Yeah, he didn't tell her nothing. That was crazy. That was crazy to me. She was like, I was with you during the campaign, for two campaigns.
Yes.
And he left her out. Left her
and
out.
And that's almost like the similar what they say, we what we think about our jobs, but if you died, they'd have the job description posted on LinkedIn, the next week. So we have all this loyalty to the job, but when it comes down to the protocols, some people are getting left and some people are coming with us to a hole in the ground in Colorado.
Yep.
And
yep.
I think they did a wonderful job of showing how that was unveiled and how, particularly for the people who didn't know, the people who suspected,
Or even
like the janitor who was
That was so good.
Yes.
That was so good because he kept looking at that dude and he kept like, you could tell he wanted to tell this guy. He didn't want to like bring him to Colorado with him, but he was like, dude, stop freaking cleaning the floor. Like, go home to your family and say goodbye. Yes. And then when he finally does tell him, the guy's like, oh no, I'm sure this is just like whatever. I'll see my family later. And he's like, no, you need to go see your family now.
But
and
he still didn't believe him until he decided to do the speech
again.
Live
rather than
do a recorded speech. Mm-hmm. And I mean, everything was inherently dramatic there. And so the writing was elevated. And you already had excellent actors who could rise up with that elevated writing. So I just thought episode 7 was brilliant.
X's character is like trying to contact his wife during the entire episode. And you see him like trying to leave her messages, trying to text her, trying to get, you know, to the airport. They're like, you got clearance. If she can get there in 40 minutes, she'll be fine. And she's like, I can't get there. I don't have a car. And he's like, steal a car. Like,
I love that line.
And all of that when that's going on is great. And then the perfect moment is when they're about to get on the plane and he's paralyzed. And the president is like, you need to go. You need to be there for your children. And he goes, when did you know that she wasn't going to make it? And he was like, the moment you told me she was in Atlanta.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, oh.
Yeah, that was.
Crushed. That was, and just, that just really changed their relationship significantly, because you also understand, as much as they're good friends, the president has all this stuff on his plate. Like, he's like, I got to give this speech. I got to, like, he's thinking about the big, big picture of what's going on. And as much as he loves his friend, he can't stop what he's doing.
And you know? It goes back to what we said last time. Believe people when they tell you something.
The
president was like, don't let it get on that plane.
Yeah.
He should have taken, I mean, we know that, of course, in retrospect, we know much more. But sometimes somebody will tell you something that you're not really listening. Yeah. So for me, with episode 7, The Day, being such a good episode,
right.
I was disappointed in episode 8, which is a finale, The Man Who Kept Secrets. They practically introduce a brand new character who then gets most of the episode as his backstory. That's the librarian who turns out to be the project manager.
Basically,
from
the butler did it. It was a butler did it kind of situation.
Yes. Right. So while technically he was not a new character, he's not at all anybody would have known the name of the character. So while it answers the question of the murder mystery, we are not at all engaged
invested in
who that character is.
Correct. Yeah.
So then he actually is the one who tried to assassinate the president before they went underground. He goes to prison, happens to be in prison in Colorado near the bunker that he helped to build.
Right.
And then when the end of the world happens, escapes from prison and figures out how to finagle his way back into the bunker. Here's the thing. The woman that he had come with him, there was no value in that whole storyline about the waitress being the woman that he had come with him.
They were trying to show you that he's not a bad guy.
He just killed two people to make that opportunity possible.
Absolutely.
So it doesn't do anything. So I just think that there were elements of the finale that just weren't value added in terms of story, emotions, or anything. And then we see Sterling apparently knows how to fly a plane because his father was a pilot.
Yes, I saw that too. Because it's genetic, you know, like if your parents know a skill, you obviously get it. But I did like the feeling I got at the end of the finale where he is now going out to find his wife. Like, I would like him to have gone with at least one other person. then, because now season two, it could just be him.
I'm not sure that I'm going to miss any of the other characters. I also don't know if they're going to do kind of like Silo did, showing right. some in the bunker and some with Sterling with X outside. But we'll.
Yeah. This is one of those things I'm in. I'm going to watch season two.
Yeah.
So next up, we're going to talk your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, and we're going to talk episodes 7 and 8. Peter, you happen to perpetually be behind whatever we're watching. So what was the last thing that you saw?
Well, I finally saw the episode Malik was talking about. Osborn is like, well, technically, you don't really have to be Spider-Man. Like, you have powers. So he has all these different suits. I thought it was great. I thought it was really, really good. And then the one that, like, terrified the little girl. He's like, oh, it's a bad ass. And then, of course, like, the Incredibles, they have the joke of, like, he gets stuck with the cape.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah.
terrible, you know. So I'm only 4 or 5 or something. So there's no way I'm that far.
So 7 and 8, what's really interesting about that is they're kind of like one episode. It's kind of like a two-parter. So it's Scorpion is the new bad guy, and he gets the tech from
Octavius, right?
Octavius, yes.
Because so what I saw was Octavius is the person giving everybody the material. Right, yes.
So he gives
But he doesn't have his arms.
No, not yet. That's where
he's got the glasses where I was like, oh, that's clearly Octavius. Right.
So in this episode, he makes a Scorpion. He gives him all this gear, and he's the head of a rival gang that Lonnie is in that, because he's in, I forgot, the 5th Street, whatever.
110th Street gang.
So when he goes to defend his brother, the leader of the gang is just like a super bully, and he seems terrible. And you're just like, okay. And obviously we don't want Lonnie to get in this situation, like with the, you know, with the trajectory of what he wants his life to be. I was like, well, obviously this is terrible, you know?
Yeah.
But I liked how the guy that we thought was a jerk, the guy who's the leader of the gang that he's in, was like, look, I know that you want to just do your own thing or whatever, but he's like, I am trying to protect our neighborhood. And I wanted you basically to see what this gang is. And you think she's bad, like the leader's even worse. And I was like, okay, that's kind of interesting. I am not saying he should be in the gang or whatever, but like,
you know, the headline is going to be Peter Parrish comes out in support of gang membership. That's going to be the headline.
This just in, Peter Parrish, somebody.
But the episodes that I want to talk about is dealing with the gang, which is the head of the opposing gang that he had warned him about. Is this dude gets the Scorpion costume, and it makes him like crazy strong.
Wait, he becomes the Scorpion? The leader of the gang is Scorpion?
The opposite of the opposing gang.
Yes, because they are the Scorpions. That's their gang name.
That's their gang name.
But the Scorpion bad guy has the tail. That's his thing.
Yes. Eventually. Yes, he gets that.
Yes.
And so the big thing about this episode is that Peter gets called in for an attack that's happening, and he doesn't know that his friend is in the gang. He doesn't know any of that. And he shows up to fight Scorpion, and he's like, oh, Lonnie, what are you doing? But then he has to pretend that he doesn't know him, because he goes, oh, right, you don't know who I am. And so he's trying to protect his friend and fight this new villain. And what's crazy is this villain is kicking his butt.
Well, yeah, Scorpion is a really... Yeah, he's pretty powerful.
And I
would echo what Libya is saying about this fight, which is nice. Many superhero shows, you expect the superhero, the good guy, to have a fight. Maybe something is challenging, and then he wins.
Right.
And this is the first time Peter fights where it's like, oh, first what happens is he runs out of web slinger. Then one of his eye pieces fractures in the middle of the fight. And then he gets stabbed through the chest by Scorpion's tail.
Yeah.
It's like he has been made. It's not just that he loses.
He loses
is getting brutalized.
And they show it in a way where you realize Peter is genuinely traumatized by this fight to the point where he doesn't want to go out again. Like, it's like in the Marvels with Hulk. Well, Hulk is like, nope, I'm done. So it's like that. I mean, here it makes more sense because he's a 15-year-old kid. So the second episode is very much about him trying to get the courage to go back out, and not just to go back out.
Episode 8, Tangled Web.
Yeah. So not only just go back out, he has to go back out and fight Scorpion again. So it's not even just like, I'm just going to go back out and just save random citizens. It's like, I'm going to go back out and get my butt kicked again. And it's really, I liked how they showed that struggle. Like, they showed, this is a kid. And this, yeah.
There's so much that I liked about episode 8, Tangled Web.
Go ahead.
I like the beginning and the end. The beginning is Peter needs a new suit. The end is Peter gets a new suit. So I like
when he gets beaten, that suit gets ripped apart.
Osborn has a Morpheus from the Matrix moment with Peter, like he's talking to Neo. There's a point in the Matrix where Morpheus is like, what are you waiting for? Like, you already have it. And Osborn is basically telling Peter, you are more powerful than this. Osborn repurposes a very well-known phrase, right? The well-known phrase is, with great power comes great responsibility. Osborn says, with great power comes great respect.
Yes.
He's like, you use your power to make people respect you. And I was like, okay, we're off to the races now.
this is where I don't really want Osborn to turn bad.
He doesn't really turn bad. He just, his objectives are different. Like, when Peter is in the hospital and he's been hurt and he's taking care of him, he also takes the opportunity to take Peter's blood. And I was like, and at first you're thinking, oh, he's just helping him. But then you're like, he turns over the blood to his science division.
There are little pieces of his personality that get revealed over each episode.
Right.
So I actually did watch the next two after that. And you get another little reveal about his episode, his personality. So he's not a maniacal villain to start out. He's an ambitious business person who does worry about respect, is concerned with power, does seem to want to do good.
Yes.
It's not a Darth Vader, I'm going to pull you to the dark side. It's not that clear cut. Yes. But the things that he says to Peter is kind of true. You up here cracking jokes and now, you know, you got a scorpion tail through your chest. So there's some ways in which the advice he's giving him is valuable.
Next up, we're going to talk about Severance, episodes 7 and 8. Though, honestly, I only really want to talk about episode 7 because 7 just like blew my mind. And it's like they give you all the answers at once. And I feel like I was like, wait, is this real life? Is this not a dream? Like, are we really doing this? Because it just basically is giving us Miss Casey's. It's not even Miss Casey, excuse me. She's actually
Gemma.
We're getting her side of the story. So she's been missing for 2 years, and we basically see a lot of those 2 years and what she's been doing and how she's been living, and her life sucks. Like, and then we get the flashback of how she met
Mark.
I almost called him Adam, which is the actor's name.
I like the meet cute. It was very
nice. You get to see how they met, but there's this like shadow of Lumen through their entire life. So like when they're at the blood drive,
they meet giving blood. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. But it's a Lumen blood drive. Right. And then when they're having a hard time having kids, they go to a doctor and it's a Lumen doctor that's doing their artificial insemination. And so there's like this shadow of Lumen over everything they're doing in their life. And then some kind of way, and we're not sure how, Gemma gets taken by Lumen, and we don't know if she voluntarily, I don't feel like she voluntarily went in there.
Oh, I do. Weren't we supposed to take away that she had a miscarriage and that she's so sad about it that she,
that's not what I read.
Oh, there's no way. And then she decided to fake her death. Like,
the whole show, like, everyone is trying to escape in this crazy, horrible, all-consuming sadness. So for me, I'm extrapolating maybe, but I'm thinking she probably signed up for it.
But without telling her husband, that doesn't make any sense.
They were fighting. They were like so mad at each other.
The last moment she leaves and he's like, I love you. He's like, oh, he's like, I'm sorry, I love you too. Like,
no, they were not fighting.
Okay. I'm talking about not right then, but they were. It's a cliche.
They were in some conflict.
As a child, they were snipping at each other.
Yeah, but that's not like I'm gonna go with this program and never see you again, so I can have this baby on my own in a closet. Like that's
she wasn't pregnant anymore. She had.
I understand. But my point is, I do not see her in a fight being like, okay, I'm going to go to this government thing and have them impregnate me and not tell my husband.
I feel like she was so sad about it.
I do not think that is true at all.
We will see. That's the thing. We don't know right now.
I do not think that at all. I really get the impression that they faked her accident and they took her. Like, that is what I think happened.
Okay. So Libya, I am the reverse of you here. I like episode 7 far more. I'm sorry, it's episode 8 far more than I like episode 7.
I liked
7.
8. I liked 8 as well.
So we'll talk about that later.
What?
I found that much of the brilliance and creativity of the show that we've seen through this whole season was not present when we were looking at it through Gemma's point of view. So I found myself less interested in the show during this episode.
That blows my mind.
The one thing that I will say that I most appreciated, and this is, you know, the writers are good in this. So going to the dentist is often viewed as a pretty unpleasant experience. Gemma, that version of Gemma, went to the dentist every 30 seconds.
Yeah, right? Jesus.
Because it's like, I go to the dentist, I do something else, I wake up and I'm going to the dentist again. That was like the ultimate form of torture. So I thought that was interesting.
Also, the woman that was at Christmas writing those Christmas cards, and he was like, don't worry, it's, you know, we'll do it next year. Blah. She's like,
that guy was awful.
And she was like, but it's always Christmas. Yeah. It's just like, wow. Like
That was kind of torture.
I love the idea that now we kind of understand what macro refinement is. Because if you go back and look at season 1 and you look at the projects that each one of them has finished, those were on the door plates of all those rooms. So like in the pilot, Devin is like, I've completed blah, blah, blah project. I can't remember the name of it.
Devin's a sister.
What's Dylan. The black dude? Dylan. Thank you. So he was like, I completed this. I'm gonna get a waffle party. I know this year. And so the name of the project that he finished in the pilot is on one of the doors in that hallway. So every name of every door is a project that Macro Refinement has finished. And you've either seen it on the screen in their office when they're working, or you've heard them say it. And so the only one that she talks about that she hasn't been going to yet is Cold Harbor, which we know is the last thing that they care about Mark finishing, which is at 90-something%.
95,
And so, but you get the feeling that when she goes to Cold Harbor, that's it. Like, that's that's going to complete something. And my personal theory is that all of the things that they're doing, where they're basically each room is like isolating a specific emotion. And so that they can cut that out of your experience. But I think the whole thing is with the goats and everything, I think they're trying to bring back Kier. I think they're going to clone him, which is what the goats are for cloning. And then I think that Macro Refinement is to put the different pieces of Kier's mind back into his brain. And I think that Gemma is the test subject to see if, you know, how possible all of this is. So that's my theory based on nothing but just conjecture in my mind. So I have no spoilers or anything. This is just my off the top of my head theory. But that's what I like so much about this episode, is that it allowed me to see the bigger picture of what's going on and come up with theories.
I told Libya I had not seen the show. I was like very behind, and there was an episode with the sister, and I was like, oh, the sister's in on it.
I know. And I didn't say anything.
You were like dead silent. And I go, oh, I'm right. because I was like, you're
wait, what?
No, the sister. She's not in on it at all.
She's not in on it?
I know.
No, at the end, Corbell, Devin calls Corbell.
The sister is not in on it because
she's scared for her brother because
he got reintegrated. We see the side of her conversation where she says, I should call Miss Selvig, who is Cobell, and get help because my brother's almost in a coma. And then Gabi is like, no, don't call her. She's a true believer. Do you not remember this part of the conversation?
I do.
Yeah, so the sister's not in on it at all.
I think she is.
She is not.
The only thing that would support Yusen's thing is, I guess you could technically say, why does she have Miss Cobell's number?
Because she was undercover. She was her nanny for the baby. That's why she has her number.
Right. Okay.
But the way that it was shot and directed, like, you know, the number came up. They're like, Devin called Miss Corbell. Bam. They go to black.
They didn't go to black. She picked up the phone and she was.
It's fine for folks to have theories. We don't have to prove them. It's fine for folks. Let her have her theories and then we'll see what happens.
Let me be wrong.
Let me be wrong. I don't understand.
Yes. Okay, can I say my theory, which will meld my impression, which will meld 8, 7, and 8. When I was a kid and I saw the original Star Wars trilogy, I remember in Return of the Jedi, spoiler alerts in case you haven't seen Star Wars, but when I saw Return of the Jedi at the end, when you find out that Luke has a twin sister and oh my God, it's Princess Leia. Like, I remember being 13 and being like, wait, his sister's actually the princess and everything. The vastness of the Star Wars universe kind of gets too small. It's like, well, I guess we're all related to each other and we're all special. The problem I sort of have here with 7 and 8, even though very well done, I love the show, is that now it seems like we position Gemma possibly be the mother of Keir, which makes her so important in this universe.
You just said Gemma to be the mother of Keir. Hold on.
No, that's not what she was saying.
That was what I was saying.
You didn't say that, though.
Yes, I did. I said the cloning. Never mind. I talked to Peter about it.
My main thing is, what I loved about Severance when the show started was that it's just these seemingly regular people that unfortunately, because of the Severance thing, can never leave their bland work life. And as the show goes on, of course, you have to create more lore. You have to create more stuff to like make this more invested. I get it. But the more specific that everyone is to this giant purpose, the less they're relatable to me. What's relatable is that it's like, oh, they're just like me at my office job. And what if this happened? And now it's like, well, what if my wife is the most ultimate thing because maybe she will mother the clone of Keir? And then in episode 8, I'm glad that Cobell is not related. But the fact that she made the actual Severance thing, I'm like, okay. And she created the Severance. It's a little like it's too many. It's making everyone so specifically important. And to me, what makes characters interesting sometimes is like, not everyone has to be the Messiah, I guess is what I'm saying.
You're saying it's a little too neat, but it does explain. Kinda. But her creating Severance explains her obsession with Mark.
It does. And I like that. And I'm glad. And like you and I said off podcast, you had said you were afraid that she was going to be like the bastard child of Egan or something like that, right?
Yes, I was.
So I'm glad it's not that. I'm glad it's that, no, she actually is a scientist. Also, what makes Egan, if Egan didn't create Severance, if Cobell did, what is it that Egan contributed to society that's so great?
He is the heir of Keir. That's it. And he has the money. He is the heir of Keir.
But what is his...
I guess I don't understand
what makes him important.
He's their prophet.
Keir is their prophet.
What did he do? What did he do as a prophet?
It's a cult, dude. It's a cult.
Yes.
Yeah, he's a cult. I mean, like.
So that's what any cult leader does is profess a philosophy that other people adopt as the ultimate truth.
Right. So he's having him be the creator of Severance makes him even greater. So that's why he took credit. He was like, you should give me this credit because you're part of the whole.
Created it.
I know.
I love that. I did not expect Miss Corbell to be the scientist genius that created Severance. Like, did anyone see that coming?
Once she revealed
that, it makes all her behavior in season one make sense.
I love that reveal. I thought the juxtaposition between Seven being so sterile and being so
enclosed in the hallways and stuff.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And then episode 8 was like a family drama. So I kind of like that. That was like a whole different feeling, and we moved away from the Lumen, and then,
that's what I didn't like.
I like what happens outside of
Lumen. I get what you're saying. To me, that felt like that could have been half of an episode.
Thank you. It didn't need to be the whole episode.
I don't know if you noticed it, but that episode was only 36 minutes.
Yes.
It was short.
So they were apparently comfortable with the idea that it's a shorter story we're telling on this episode. Yeah. We're not going to fill it with things to meet a time frame. We're going to give you a short episode. So if we remember, the first off-campus episode was the one out in the snow.
That was fantastic.
And then this one was water. So we went to a different, or at least a different version of an element. Whether it was Ben Stiller or the director of photography, the cinematographer, they took from Alia Kazan and how they shot it in terms of putting obstacles between the camera and the subject. And that
he does that all the time on the
visually
show.
Visually so compelling to me. I love that when she went to meet her childhood friend, and she asked him for help. I didn't know if he was going to help her or throw the pot of coffee in her face. and then the last thing is Sissy, who is her aunt. Talk about actors being able to go toe to toe with another actor. Everything was electric between those two.
I knew she was going to try to throw away that report in the fire. I was because they kept showing her putting wood in the fire.
Yeah.
And as soon as she was like, hey, I have proof that I did, I was like, you do not give it to her. She's going to throw it in the fire. And then they did a good job of setting that up.
Episode 7 was information I could have gotten in a summary if you'd emailed it to me. Episode 8, I absolutely needed to
I will actually say the cinematography and the editing in 7 blew me away.
I thought it was great. And the look of it was great.
It was just really well done.
Her being there and the confinement and the sterility and all. I mean, I thought it makes me want to rewatch
the show from season 1 again. I'm like, huh? Like,
I've already done that. You should get on that. All right. Let's wrap this up. We will talk to you guys next time. Stay tuned.